step who loved me. But the broken dreams have got to end.
You're listening to Puck and Roll.
Welcome back to the Puck and Roll podcast. This is part two of our interview with Jordan Harris. If you missed the last episode, Jordan is the Russia scout and crossover European scout at Dubber Prospect. So we've been working together this year, which has been very fun. And we've been scouting basically completely opposite players because I've been focusing on the OHL and North America, and he's been across the pond. So last episode, we covered kind of a variety of players with quite a big focus on Russia. So I think I wanted to start today off with a player that is top five or top 10 on certain boards. For me, he's more of a 15 to 25 range player, but I'm very curious to hear your take on Dalibor Dvorsky, who is playing professional hockey in Sweden. But he is Slovakian, and he will be playing with Slovakia during the World Juniors alongside Habs prospect Filip Mešar.
Yeah, so Dvorsky, I think I've come down a bit on him. He's got good size. He's like 6'1", 200 pounds or so. He looks pretty thick. And he does a lot of stuff like quite well. But outside of his shot, I thought preseason that he had a lot more traits that were like great. But now I'm starting to think that he's just I don't mean this in a negative at all. Like, this is a very good player we're talking about. But I see a guy who's pretty good at a lot of things with a great shot versus, and that's still that's still a mid first round pick. Like, that's a great player. Versus what I thought he might have been before the season, where it was a guy who does a lot of things great and some things pretty good. His shot, like, he's the guy who he'll always line up on the half wall on the power play. He can fire it. It's accurate. It's hard. He does a really good job getting off quick and also, like, knowing when to shoot. But yeah, everything else, I'm just saying, oh yeah, that's pretty good. He's pretty good as in supporting his line mates too. I think at least supporting the play in the defensive end. He's playing with AIK, which is the other team in Stockholm, the other being Djurgården, and both of them right now are in Hockey Allsvenskan. He started about out in the J20, so in the junior league, and he was clearly like too good for that. Like, he was over a point per game, and he started producing quite a bit at the beginning once he first got called up to the Allsvenskan team, but he's really started to slow off a bit there. And production's obviously not everything for sure, but I think part of it is that, maybe his pace isn't as fast as maybe we thought it was, or maybe his skating's not as great as we thought it was. And things are just pretty good. And when you're draft eligible, Hockey Allsvenskan is not the SHL, but it's still a very good league too. And I think that's maybe why he hasn't shown out as much as I thought he would, but I still like him.
I think I'm in a pretty similar boat. Like, for me, he is a more physical and refined and center version of Jonathan Lekkerimäki, in a sense of the shot is really what his game is built on, right? Like, that is very central. I think Lekkerimäki is a better skater than Dvorsky is now. I think Lakhromaki was a better skater last year than Dvorsky is now. But they have some similar traits in terms of, like, they often cheat for offense. They are surprisingly effective on the back check in terms of stick lifting, but inside the defensive zone, they are very much puck watchers and aren't really factors at all, especially against pro competition. But their shooting skill still stands out in a pro league in Sweden. Obviously, now both are in the Allsvenskan, but last year Lakhromaki was playing in the SHL. But yeah, his skating's good, right? I don't want to make it sound like his skating's bad. It's just like Lakhromaki's a very, very good skater, and Dvorsky has a good stride. But yeah, again, as you were saying, it's good. It's not standout necessarily. For me, I think that the two biggest things that I want to see him improve this season for him to kind of climb back up my board from mid first is I want to see him scanning more often. Like, even in the offensive zone, he has decent hockey sense. It's just he limits himself by not actively scanning as much as he should be. And defensively, there is virtually no scanning involved. It's just watching the puck carrier. And the other thing is he needs to work on his playmaking. He's very one-dimensional offensively. He's shoot, 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 and he's a great shooter. He has a very diverse set of releases. He gets it off so quickly. It's very impressive. He's a top five shooter in the entire draft class. But if he were to add a playmaking aspect to his game, he becomes so much more dangerous by just having that dual threat. Yeah, interesting. So how would you compare, like if you were to rank him with guys like Sandin Pelikka and Gulyayev? Obviously different position, but like you're saying, like those guys for you are kind of like that 15 to 17 ish range. Would Dvorsky be right in that bunch? Or
yeah, right around there. Yeah, like I if someone said to me that you know, you're picking Dalibor Dvorsky with your 13th overall pick, I'd say, okay, I'd be fine. If someone said, no, you're going to get him at 18 or 19, I would also say, yeah, that kind of checks out. I find like numerical rankings a little bit difficult because I like to
do tiers.
Kind of clusters. Cause
it like, always is clusters. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you look at it and I remember 2020, like 2020, it's funny. It hasn't looked like this now, but it was like, you know, Lafreniere and Byfield. And then it was in the Stutzla, I guess was three. And then after that, it was, you know, you had 12 guys or like 10, maybe eight more guys who you really could have made an argument at four, you know, whether it's Cole Perfetti, Marco Rossi, Jack Quinn, Lucas Raymond, Jake Sanderson, Evanson. You know, Drysdale Holtz.
Evanson was, I'm off. Evanson was 2021.
Anyways, but you had a lot of those guys. And I remember I was talking to somebody and they said, oh, like you have such and such player. I can't remember who it was. Anton Lundell. Yes, they said, oh, you have him at six, I have him at 10. Like, you know, I said, okay, but he's in the same group as everybody.
Yeah.
And six and 10 seems like a big gap, but they're, I found all those players very, very similar. And really, like, they're all kind of like on the same level, really.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, okay. Because I think for me, at least currently, Gulyayev and Sandin Pelikka would be like a quite distinct tier above a guy like Dalibor Dvorsky, despite the fact that Dvorsky has a longer track record of exceptional production. And that is something to value too, right?
Yep. I think that's why I don't have those two above him distinctly, is because I think Dalibor Dvorsky is going, maybe, you know, kind of just going through his lumps and stuff like that. But like, man, he put 40 points up in the J20 last year as a D-1. He's got the size, he's got that shot, and everything else is pretty good. Like I think since he doesn't have necessarily any glaring weaknesses, I know his defensive game is, you know, not as great. I do think that if a couple of those just get, you know, from, you know, middle of the pack in terms of, you know, quality to steps up a bit, then I think that would go a long way with him. So I think that's kind of why I have him right with him versus those guys ahead.
Yeah, awesome. Sticking in within like the Nordic countries, Kasper Haltonen is really the only ultra notable Finn yeah. in this draft class, and I haven't gotten an actual scouting viewing of him in yet. I've watched him in passing, but I haven't actually zeroed in on him just yet. So I don't really have much of a formed opinion on him. What's your takeaway from him?
I've watched him a little bit since the Hlinka. Not as much as other guys, of course. You know what? Like, I don't care for him as much as some other players. I don't think he's. I don't think the motor's great. I'm not saying he's lazy, because he's not lazy. But there's a spectrum of how good your compete level is, and he's lower than a lot of other people. He's an okay skater. His shot's really, really good. Don't find him. I don't see great playmaking necessarily from him, as I would with some other players. He's kind of like the opposite of Otto Stenberg. I find Otto Stenberg kind of good at, or kind of, you know, pretty solid at everything. Whereas Haltonen's a little bit more extremes. Like, you know, his shot's really, really good, and he's got really great size, and he's strong. But then he's also got a lot of like valleys, you know, to offset his peaks. I value compete a lot more. Not necessarily that, if you're just, you've got elite compete, you'll be a good player, but I find that like compete definitely doesn't make you turn or take you from a bad prospect to a good prospect, but I think it gives you the edge on comparable prospects. Because at that point you're going to generate just simply because you're outworking other people. And when your shot isn't working as in, like, if you've got a really, really good shot, it's not going to work all the time. Like, I'm a Red Wings fan. We have Philip Zadina. He's injured right now, but his shot, he hasn't been a good shooter in the NHL, and that was his calling card. And yeah, he's a lot more, you know, he's a lot more two-way than I thought he was when he was drafted, but that's not what going to keep him in the NHL. And when you're a guy who has really, really high skill or really a good shot, and your compete isn't super, super good, if you go through those dry spells or it's just not translating, then you don't really have much of a chance at being that effective of a player. And that's kind of what I see with Haltonen.
Yeah, about...
Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I just feel that compete's one of those things that is unteachable in a prospect. Like, to me, it's kind of where it is depending on the player. Like, we talk about skating mechanics, shooting mechanics, those are things that can be improved upon using coaching. But to me, compete, hockey sense, those are a lot harder to teach and grow in a player, especially when you're looking at coaching staff and things like this, where you can teach to be a more fluid skater or to have a better shot. In my opinion, I think looking at the compete of prospects is a really good sign to see how they will translate into the NHL, because that level is going to stay the same throughout their whole career, pretty much, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you nailed that there. Like the brain thing as well, like your IQ, that being another thing. Like, it's pretty much it. Like, if you've got really good IQ and you compete like a dog, and you're an above average skater, you can probably find it, like, and you're not like, you know, 120 pounds, you can probably carve out a role in the NHL. Will you ever be a good NHL player? Probably not. But you can at least do something, and you can at least do something with that. And also those things that you mentioned, like, oh, your shot and your skating and all that stuff. Yeah, some of those things are coachable, but it takes two to tango. It's the coaching, but it's also the ability to put in that work and to take to coaching well and to really be serious about you know, fixing your mechanics. And usually people of really high compete also have a little bit more dedication to their craft as well. And that's why I've seen players, you know, improve their skating or improve their shot. Like no one will ever just go from an average shooter to being Alexander Ovechkin, but you can go to an average shooter to then becoming an above average shooter. So,
and I think on that note, we're just going to take a little quick break and get a quick little ad read in. So Aaron, take it away.
I mean, just before I start that, I do want to say we don't usually see average shooters turn into elite shooters, but Tage Thompson scored 5 goals like 2 nights ago. So
Tage Thompson is a unicorn.
Mitch Brown.
I've seen people saying that Slaff is going to be the next Tage Thompson, and I would love that.
That is best case scenario. Absolute best case scenario.
Well, do you want to bet on Yuri Slafkovsky scoring 5 goals in a game? You probably don't. But if you do, DraftKings Sportsbook is the place to go. Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot and an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. It's promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
What a transition that was, Aaron. Wow.
Oh, I can't help that on the spot. That was...
It was beautiful.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Very impressed.
All right, this isn't being cut out. This is all going to stay in the pod because I need a little bit of an ego boost right now. It's been a tough day.
So Jordan, I think one question I just want to kind of set you off on and just give you the platform to do it is just, what are some players that you just want to talk about? I don't care what league they play in. I don't care whether you're going to rank them or not. Who do you just find interesting?
Yes, definitely. I'm just going to bring up, I want to have their elite prospects page while I chat on him. Okay, so one person I have not heard a single, big media scout, whether it's somebody from TSN or Sportsnet or, The Athletic and, Flow Hockey, stuff like that, I have not heard anybody talk about is Dynamo Moscow's Magomed Sherikhanov. The first game I watched of him, what I used to describe him was a rolling ball of butcher knives.
Oh.
He's a late 2004. He's 6'1", 201. And he looks like, and I don't mean that he's fat. Like he looks like he's got to be jacked. Like he looks huge. His skating is good. Quite good actually. His compete is like amazing. He's very physical. And what's great about him is that I don't want to say that he's rolling ball butcher knife sounds like you're reckless, you're playing cowboy hockey and stuff like that, which he kind of does, but it's not necessarily that he's reckless in the sense that he makes poor decisions. It's almost in the sense where he is he's actually quite measured in the defensive zone. It's just that he is on you so quick. He can he's got the foot speed to keep up with you. He's so good at defending the rush, and then he's just a dog along the boards. Like I saw a guy who was kind of like a really fast, like a your 5'8", 160 pound junior player who's really fast and really shifty, and in a lot of the bigger defensemen, it's difficult for them to keep up. So this guy was, skating behind the net, and he probably turned back 2 or 3 times just to trying to shake Sherikhanov. And Sherikhanov was with him step for step. And it was more than just because his compete was so good. He's also pretty quick as well. He ended up getting the guy, chasing the guy basically around to the sideboards, laid a big hit on him, pinned him there, took the puck, had the presence of mind to look out for a breakout pass, hit the guy with the pass, and then the guy, went up with it. So he's actually like really, really he's not careless. However, when I say that he's a rolling ball of butcher knives, he picks his spots really well to jump up in the rush, but he looks like a defensive lineman who is picking up a fumble in football, and it's the first time he's ever held a football because he's a defensive tackle, and he really wants to like run for a touchdown, and he falls because he's going at full speed. He picks his spots perfectly and when to rush, and I've seen him rush and then actually trip over his own feet and fall. Like, I've seen him try to do like six dekes on a defender, and he just ties himself up in a ball there. So that's kind of what I mean there. But he is, his energy and his compete is off the charts. He's big. I can't remember who we were talking about for a guy who doesn't shoot. It was in the last episode, a guy who doesn't shoot for goals, but a guy who shoots for tips and rebounds. That's what Sharokhanov does really well. He's definitely trying to he'll keep it like low, something that the guy in the net front can get a stick on. That's what he'll do, but it's a nice hard shot. He's really good. Moscow has him running their power play one. I don't think he's that type of guy in the NHL. I think he's a good passer. I don't think he's a good passer. I don't think he's a great passer, like to be your power play quarterback. But he is like his compete, his physicality. He smokes guys. He's got great speed. Right away, like he's going to be playing middle pair minutes at some point, I think, and no one really seems to be talking about him, and I have him in like the second round, so I don't know. He might go in the fifth round. He might end up going in the second round. I don't know. Maybe he's just one of those guys that people haven't watched enough, and they'll catch up to him later. But he's so fun to watch, and one of my favorite prospects.
He also has a name to match his playstyle, Magomed. Oh, yes. That's quite the name, like rolling ball of butcher knives. Like, you were coming up with the best metaphors for players.
Oily hips and
yeah,
rolling ball. Wow, that is quite the image. Interesting, because I at least among the North American players, I can't think of a single player that that I would describe as a rolling ball of butcher knives.
Yeah.
So he sounds like quite unique profile for this draft class,
for sure. I'm seeing him. So I see this other player, and he's not a prospect. He's not a draft prospect. He's already been drafted. But I see this player a lot because I follow the Red Wings. Marco Kasper has been a menace in the SHL. Yes.
He's
been ejected, I think, from two games. I think he got a penalty for like, I don't know what happened. I think he might have like just kind of like shouldered off a ref when they're trying to break him up, or like he obviously didn't punch a ref, but like he got like a penalty for abuse of referee, which is like, oh my God, like, wow. And it's funny, if you look at him, he actually like, he's got like a baby face. Like he looks like a choir boy. I don't know. He looks like just such a nice kid. And that's another guy who in his skating is very good. His skating is better than Sharokhanov's. Marco Kasper's skating is so good, but that guy is a menace out there. He's his whole game, definitely last year, less so this year, was how do we get the puck to the net, in the quickest way, which is a straight line. Like, he will beeline for the net. He's been laying guys out. He's just been so good like that. And I think I said to you, Sebastian, I said Sharokhanov kind of reminded me of like a defensive version of that.
Interesting.
Not as good of a skater. Like, I don't think he's first round talent, but because I think his ceiling's only a middle pair defenseman. But I think I think his floor is also like a third pair defenseman. So I don't think I think he makes the leap.
Interesting. And I mean, Kasper has just gotten better with every viewing I've had of him. Like I was one of the people that ranked him in like the 20 to 25 range. I had him, I think, at 22 on my board, which was one spot ahead of Owen Beck. I had those two guys back to back just because like for both of them, I thought that there was untapped offensive potential. I loved the motor. I loved the intelligence. I loved the defensive play. And I thought that both were very safe bets for middle six centers in the NHL moving forward. And I think both of those guys, if I were to do a re-ranking of my board right now, both of those would shoot up into the top 20, right? And possibly even top 15 range if I were to stretch that. But yeah, I mean, the Red Wings got an exceptional player there. And they have the tendency to go a bit off the board in the top 10.
Oh, absolutely. And what I think that there needs to be is, and this, it doesn't just apply to the Red Wings, but I would love if somebody did a breakdown of you like the draft day picks, where I'm not talking like, oh, a guy who, you know, who's going to go 15 goes 8, like not that big of a reach, but where people were laughing or were at a loss of words for what
happened.
Tyler Boucher, Yegor Chinnikov, Mort Sider. That was another thing. I watched that video like once a month. They call his name, you know, Mannheim of the DEL, Moritz Sider. And then you hear, you know,
even from Montreal, like Kotkaniemi, like there was the famous reaction in the draft video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like you look at some guys and it ends up being, well, like, you know, Yegor Chinnikov is like a half a point player on a, you know, on Columbus, and that team, he doesn't have a lot of support. I'm not saying he's a good player, but people, you know, as a re-entry player, how many of those re-entry players get picked in the middle of the first? Not many. And it's
I don't know who else has been picked in the first round as a re-entry in the last 10 years. Has anyone as a re-entry? I know Jonas Moser went early in the second. And he was a D+2.
Josh Dillon went early in the second. Josh Dillon went
early. Riker Evans went early in the second.
Yeah, Riker Evans. Yeah, he did.
I loved Riker. In the 2020 draft, which is when I started actually tracking like who I would pick for the Habs in their slot, I picked Riker Evans in the seventh round. And then the next year, he went in the second. And I was like, let's go. And that was over half a point a game in the AHL. See, and I'm like,
that is Seattle has climbing. Drafted so well.
Except for their expansion draft, yes.
Yeah. They're great amateur drafters.
Excellent amateur drafters.
Yeah.
Jagger Furkus.
I wanted their draft with our picks. Like,
yeah, they had the best class last year. I like theirs more than anyone else's.
They did, but I'm not pandering here. I really liked the Habs draft. And for me to say that when I probably would have gone a different direction for the first overall pick. You still guys got a great player, but even at that, like I looked through, I really like Philip Meschar. I loved Owen Beck. I can't believe he was there at 33.
Yeah.
I like Lane Hutson, but I didn't think that he wasn't going to pick him in the top 25 just because he was so small. Like it's not,
yeah.
Like he was smaller than Quinn Hughes, like much smaller.
Under 150 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. And then when he had that note that basically was like, I don't know, I feel like it was written on a cocktail napkin being like, I will grow, you know, like it was.
It's the biggest boss move to show up to the combine with a doctor's note proving that like biologically you could grow another 3 inches. That is like what kind of prospect would do that?
You know what's funny?
One with real compute.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, you know what? He has got that dog in him for sure.
Oh, he does.
But
it's like a toy poodle or something.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not like a pit bull or anything. It's a toy poodle. In the NFL draft, though, there's guys who have because you know weight does matter in football because it's such a physical sport, and there are guys who have like downed like 3 liters of water before their weigh-ins, so they could go from being 235 pounds as a defensive end to being 242, maybe, you know, like it's like there are people who have done that. And that kind of reminded me of that, just having the note saying, oh, I will grow or like, you know, I will be taller than I am right now. But like, I actually had Vincent Rohr in like the 65 range. You guys got him at 75. Adam Engstrom, I watch a lot of, he's with Rögle now in the SHL. A lot, that's Red Wings East right now. They have a few guys there. So I've watched a lot of him. He's been impressive. And I actually don't think I would have had him in the in the third round when you guys picked him, but he seems to be looking good.
And he thinks he can become the next, like, Bobby Orr.
He said in an interview that he believes he could become the next Cale Makar, and I love that. Like, I like, imagine just the cojones to say, as a recent third-round draft pick, that you believe that you can beat Cale Makar, and then Lane Hudson comes out and says the exact same thing, like, a week ago. It's, like, it's beautiful. I love the confidence.
Fellow third-round pick, Adam Fox.
Yes, exactly.
You know what's funny? That confidence is like somebody who's read one book and thinks they're an expert on one thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's great. The amount of confidence it takes to say that. But even like, you know, Cedric Guindon and Miguel Tournier, like those are good players.
Jared Davidson.
We don't talk about Jared. Hey, Jared Davidson is like top five in the WHL in points a game as a 20-year-old. We have talked about him on this podcast, and but let's just say his skating isn't a strength, and we were all a bit perplexed by that draft pick. Have you at all watched Petteri Nurmi, or not at all? No. I wasn't expecting it.
Finland's my blind spot, and especially drafted players from Finland.
I don't blame you at all. I have a blind spot, but the same thing in North America with drafted guys. Like, it was him and Davidson that were kind of like the oddball picks that the Habs made, of like overage guys that weren't really on anyone's draft radars, that were just kind of picked either because of production or because they were on World Junior rosters.
But what I will say about last year's draft, I think it was, I don't know, this is the first draft in a long, long time where pretty much after like the middle of the fourth, there was nobody left who I actually knew. I always find there's a few drafts where, well, there's a couple, I think like Rudinen was still around or whatever, but
yeah,
there's always guys who fall. And I felt pretty much after the third round that almost everybody who I had at least some viewings on or knew of was picked, and it probably went as consistent as maybe any draft probably could. Like I think of like Sean Farrell making it to 124 was like,
yeah,
I couldn't believe that.
Dylan Duke fell to like the late fourth or early fifth round then in 2021. Yeah, like Gradino was the last one of that tier of player that fell for me. Like for me, my rankings last year, there was like a monumental drop off between 54 and 55. 54 for me was almost closer to like 20 than it was to 55. Like it was very clear of like a massive distinction in tiers between 54 and 55 for me. 55 for me was Jeremy Wilmer, who is now Lynn Hudson's teammate and fellow short king. Or BU, who I adore, and I will champion him forever. He was by far the lead in USHL scoring last season. He's 5'7", he's tiny, but really smart, really skilled. But there were far more question marks than 54. G54 for me was Sal Monson, right? Like that is
he's way better.
There's a clear drop off there. And then after that, it was very more like the guys I picked after that were like curious cases, right? So guys where it's like, okay, it's an interesting swing, but not necessarily players that I'm ultra confident in. So there was Wilmer, there was Tyler Duke, who I liked a lot, who went undrafted. So basically from that point onwards, I was just picking guys that didn't end up getting drafted at all. Like Hugo Haviland was another one, right? Like
yeah, a lot I was of about undersized,
undervalued players that didn't end up getting picked. One that did get picked, that was my last pick of the draft from my personal board, was Alexis Jeanneron, who is now lighting up the QMJHL and is really fun, super high motor, very intelligent player. But yeah, for sure, there was a very significant drop off where like Dylan Duke, who was the final player available that I was high on in 2021, would have been in that like Salamonson tier of like a tier above and who fell further, right? Whereas this year it was Verdinen. And then here in the 2023 draft class, at least from again, I don't have a very full view of the class just yet. It's still very much being rounded out, as I'm sure you can relate to, Jordan. But there's far more depth in this draft. Of I know for a fact, like my top tier, not top tier, but like my, if I have a tier where there's like a cutoff, like a very big cutoff in quality from like, oh, prospective NHLer to interesting cases, it's not going to be between like 54, 55. It's going to be far closer to the 70 mark, right? There's going to be far more interesting swings to take in the later rounds than there was last year. So like, I'd be very curious, like if I were a team in the NHL, if I were a GM, I'd be wanting to add fourth, fifth, sixth round draft picks, as many as I could, right? Because you're going to get third round talents that are just going to drop to you in those later rounds. So that would be a strategy that I'd like to see more teams taking, because it's kind of clustering. Like this year, it not only does it go deep, but it's also, as you mentioned with like Guyayev and Sending Pelika, of just kind of like that clustering. I feel like there's a very big cluster between like sixth and like 20th overall, where
yeah,
you move quite far between those, and there is a drop in quality, but it's not huge, which is also why, for instance, the Habs, who are not tanking as they should be, I'm not as stressed about it, because the difference between having the sixth overall pick and having the 12th overall pick isn't like it's significant, but it's not like something that is going to tarnish a rebuild by any means whatsoever, because a player like Andrew Kristall could be available at 12, which would be incredible. Like Kristall is one of my favorites in this draft class. He he's scoring.
He's 20 on fourth overall for me.
Yeah, I agree. He's fifth on my board. He's scoring at almost 2 points a game in the WHL on a weak team, a non-playoff team. And he is the best playmaker in the entire draft class from what I've seen so far. I would take his playmaking ability, passing playmaking ability over Connor Bedard, which is really saying something. And wow. I'm a huge fan of his. He's undersized. Doesn't have the pre-draft pedigree of guys like Fantilli, Bedard, and Mishkov, which is why he's likely going to be available later on in like the later top 10, or even falling outside of the top 10, which would present tremendous value for a draft pick.
Sure. I mean, that kind of leads me to, when I was at the draft, the most confusing trade I saw at the draft was when Kent Hughes traded the 128th overall pick for a 2023 fourth. How did he pull that off?
Oh, I've seen that before. Yeah, it's you know what that is. That's basically, so I think what they do, I know in football they definitely do this, is you pretty much have like their draft boards are way smaller than like a draft board that, you know, Sebastian would make. Like,
yeah,
I think that
they, like 70 max.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. And it's like, yeah, you know, there's like six or seven guys they'd pick in the third round, and, you know, and eight or nine guys they'd pick in the fourth and all that stuff. I think when you do that, when you trade a pick in that current round for a complete pick next year, you're saying there's nobody here I'd really even want to use a fourth round pick on or whatever. And I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, punt this to the next year.
We could have just taken Jared Davidson two picks earlier.
No, yeah. Like, yeah, they could, I guess they also might, you know, have some sort of insight that they've, you know, kind of looked into and think, hey, this fourth round pick next year might actually be a better player than who I could ever get. Because right now, who's on the court right now is maybe a fifth round pick or something.
Yeah. And when you mentioned like the draft day trade, I think the one that I was like stunned by, I'm not gonna go into Kirby Duck. I'm going to the Arizona San Jose trade. Where Arizona traded a late first and two early second round picks to move up to 11th overall to pick Connor Geeky, which to me was just like stunning. Arizona's draft capital last year was incredible. They could have had they could have built the spine of a future contender in that draft. They could have had a collection of guys like Shane Wright, Brad Lambert, Jagger Furkus, Lane Hudson. The list goes on. They could have had so many of those players. And instead, they traded three value. That was the draft to trade down. Like that was the draft to trade down within the first and second round, because
and then San Jose with all their new draft
capital. Exactly, it's why I found it so hilarious.
They arguably got a better player at 29 with Philip Bistad.
I'm not the biggest fan of Bistad. I found it a hilarious trade because when it was made, I was like, oh my god, what a fleecing. And then by the end of it, when San Jose made their picks, I was like, San Jose won the trade, but like they could have gotten so much more. They could have gotten Brad Lambert. I don't know if they could have gotten Jagger Furcus, but
Were they Cam Lund or were they?
They were Cam Lund, yeah.
So yeah, they could have gotten Jagger Furcus.
They could have had Brad Lambert, Jagger Furcus, and Lane Hudson.
Or Callie O'Dellius. Never mind, it was 35. Okay.
But they could have had
or Adam Sikora.
Brad Lambert, Adam Sikora, and Lane Hudson, or Gradinan, or O'Dellius, or whoever. I like Matthias Havlid a ton. That was, I think, like at least for me, he was my favorite player that they picked between Hanlon, Philip Bistad, and him. But what are your thoughts on Bistad? Because I wasn't a big fan last year.
You know, and to be honest, I had him in my second. I was just saying, in hindsight, like, Bistad looks like he's better than the guy who Arizona traded up for, being Connor Geeky. You know, like Matthias Havlid's over a half a point per game in the SHL right now, playing, you know, second line. Like in the U18s last year, he was playing center and on the same line as Carlson in this year's draft, which I was like, oh, it's, you know, because people keep saying, oh, Carlson's a center. I actually like Carlson on the wing a lot, and I'm okay. Like, I don't really think that there's much difference really in that with him. I kind of like him on the wing. But it just showed that they trusted Bistad so much to put him at center on the national team, despite having Carlson on that same line. He's been a lot better this year than I thought he was going to be. Like I said, when the draft happened, I thought, oh my god, like, you trade all the way back, you got all these picks, and you use on Philip Bistad. But now it's actually looking a little bit better than that.
Like, if Arizona had taken Ostlund or Nazer, or
there are a bunch of options at 11. Absolutely. Yeah, like if they trade up for Frank Nazer, I'd be like, done and dusted. Like yeah, you're overpaying to trade up, but you're overpaying for a potentially elite player who I am worried about now. Like losing your entire D+1 to injury is heartbreaking. Yeah. And good as Nazer is, I don't know if he's going to fully bounce back from that to be the player that I ranked him second overall to be. I think it's been a very it was a very interesting draft. And just circling back to the 2023 class, are there any final notes, Jordan, of players we haven't hit?
Because we have gone this whole time, and I
we realized, have. I know.
I forgot to talk about the big fish.
The big fish in Russia.
Yes, I forgot to talk about Matvei Michkov. So Matvei Michkov, I've watched most of his games actually, because he hasn't played much this year. Just a background on him. So I think we all know who he is as a player. Like, just a elite offensive talent. The shot is amazing. The playmaking is so good, but it's one of those things where, because his shot's so amazing, people kind of just pigeonhole him as a shooter, or like just only bring that up, where I think maybe the casual fan might not realize how amazing he is as a playmaker and how smart he is. He's so smart in the offensive end. All that's still true to this day. He did miss the start of the season. He was doing some preseason games, and what Russia did was they took basically like a young guns team. I think it was everybody like under the age of 23 or something like that. And they played them against like KHL teams, and Alexei Emelin, who used to play in the NHL and he wasn't the cleanest player, went knee on knee with Michkov, and Michkov was out. So he was it was very, very hush when that happened. At first, it was always going to be back in 2 to 4 weeks. It ended up being like 6 or 7 or so. So he missed the start of the KHL season. He came back and he was put into a KHL game, and they played him for 2 minutes. So he pretty much just was there to watch. And then after that, he went and played for the their BHL affiliate. And he had, I think, 4 goals in the first 2 games or something like that. Like, he was looking like himself and everything. It wasn't the best Matvei Michkov I've seen, but it was, you know, four goals in 2 games is still, in a pro league, is still amazing, even when he wasn't at his best. But since then, he's had, I think it's 3 instances now where he has missed at least 10 days, like where he hasn't played a game in 10 days. And the most recent coming to an end a few days ago, where he didn't play for almost a month. I know that there's international stuff as well in between. Like, I think Russia had like kind of a pseudo like international tournament with the only countries that they can actually play with. So it was like Belarus and a few other things. And I think it was like the U18s versus the U20s and stuff like that. So he was playing some games there. I understand that there's times where he might go up with the KHL team for a road trip and he doesn't see any games, and therefore he's missed a bunch of stuff like that. But this has happened so much, and he's just not getting a lot of playing time. And it's a very curious case for me, because it doesn't make any sense from a development standpoint. And they're invested in his development because they have him for 3 more years after this. That's why a lot of people are wondering whether he'll go at 2 or 3. And to be honest, I think he'll probably go at 4. So there, it doesn't make sense from a development standpoint. You want your young players playing. It doesn't make sense from a competitive aspect, because he could be a good player on their KHL team. If they think, you know what, we're fine, because they have like that, their KHL team's been like running the league, and they think, you know, we can win it without him. Okay, fine. Then put him in the VHL, let him dominate. He's had a goal game. He's at 9 goals through 10 games. We'll let him dominate there, and, you know, let him score 50 goals in the VHL. Well, they're not doing that either. And at the same time, think about how many tickets they would sell at a VHL game, whereas, you know, they don't really, like, those are often pretty empty. And then, yeah, so, like, it doesn't make any sense from, like, a business perspective. It doesn't make any sense from, like, a development perspective. It doesn't make any sense from a competitive perspective. It's just very strange. And I don't know what's going on. I haven't heard anything. Like, you know, when he doesn't play, you know, I don't hear any reports, and I know, obviously, you know, getting information out of there is difficult, and people are hush and everything. And there, you know, there's, you know, obviously the geopolitical aspect and a lot of things, you know, just others, there's noise going on. Right. But it's just very strange. And I feel bad for the guy, because when he's been playing, he's been Matvei Michkov that we all know. And I just haven't seen enough of him, because he's only played in, you know, 10 league games plus, you know, the KHL game for 2 minutes or whatever it was. So yeah, it's very difficult. I like, he's, as far as talent goes, he's the second best player. I think if you know, contract aside and on all the stuff I just talked about aside, I still think I'd pick him third, because he's allergic to defense. Like he doesn't play it. It's difficult, but like, he is so exceptionally gifted offensively that, you know, I'm okay if, like, he could be a 100-point guy, and, like, you know, it's, and I wouldn't think that's out of the, I don't even think that's an extreme take. So I'm okay with that. The only thing, though, is that Fantilli, it's not that Michkov as a player has dropped it all, in my view. Fantilli has, like, really taken off. Yeah, and I can see Fantilli being a guy who gets, like, 85 points a season and is just, like, your rock as a number one center. And, you know, I think I kind of value that a little bit more.
And you get an extra, what, 4 seasons of them, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. An extra 3 for sure. And that's kind of where I have it. Right now, Michkov is my number 3 player on my board, but I understand fully that he's probably going to go 4th at the earliest. And if things keep up, like if he still doesn't play too much, and if, you know, if there's ever anything getting out that says, like, oh, well, you know, maybe he won't come over, because there's always that, you know, consideration. I could see teams saying, you know what, like, the rest of the draft class is so good that I think I could pick somebody ahead. As of right now, though, there is nobody other than Leo Carlson and Adam Fantilli and Connor Bedard who I'd pick over him. And I don't think there's anybody, and I'm not sure if anybody will ever take that from him. But if a team gets spooked off and you know thinks that there might be an issue with just getting him, you know, over here in time, then I could see him dropping.
Yeah, I think my expectation for Michkov is unless you see a team with a very, very progressive scouting like system in the top four, I can't see him getting picked in the top four or top three at the very least. I think like the 4 to 6 range is where he's going to fall.
And then again, I could see the Habs being that team just because of Nick Bobrov and his ties to CSKA.
For sure, right? Like, and we have seen the Habs, like I mean, they have Cole Caulfield, for God's sakes, right? Like they know how valuable undersized players who have exceptional skill and shooting talent can be. And for listeners who haven't watched Michkov yet, the best comparison I've come up with so far for Matvei Michkov is a D+2 Cole Caulfield, which was the season where he won the Hobie Baker with Wisconsin and then came to the NHL and with the Habs playoff run, right? Like that was a season where Cole Caulfield lit up Vegas in the playoffs and scored 4 goals and 5 points in 10 regular season games. Like that is a very good player, and that is my comparable for Michkov. I would say that Michkov is less involved defensively, not that Cole Caulfield is exactly a Selke candidate, but there is at least like a semblance of effort defensively for Caulfield. Yeah. And he's learning some defensive tenacity. Whereas with Michkov, it's not just an inability to play defense, it's an unwillingness to do so. And that I think is quite an important distinction, but there is tremendous skill there and he's dynamic and, he's very fun to watch with a puck on a stick.
Definitely. I think the team that takes him, if there's a team that takes him a bit earlier than, you know, like in the 2 or 3 range, it'll be a team that I think is starting their teardown as a rebuild where they know that they're going to be bad for the next couple of years.
Vancouver?
Yeah. Like maybe Vancouver. I know the Ducks started their teardown like last year when they started, like when they were in a playoff spot and they got 1 point below a playoff spot and then started to trade guys. Like they traded Hampus Lindholm and, you know, Raquel, whatever. And they tried to trade, they tried to trade for Dodonov or whatever.
They tried.
They're still being good, but they were starting kind of their teardown last year. I could see maybe a team that says, hey, we know we're going to be picking in the top five for the next 2 to 3 years. We can go ahead and pick this guy. And then therefore we might be picking, you know, whether it's, Macklin Celebrini next year, or maybe in the Michael Mesa sweepstakes the year after. That's what I can see. The other thing is what's really interesting with the Ducks is they have, and I know you can move these guys around, but if the Ducks get the first pick, they'll have Bedard, Zegras, McTavish, and Nathan Gaucher as their centers,
which that is, I know, a disgusting center court.
You're probably going to move Zegras to
Zegras?
The wing.
Yeah.
If Zegras isn't on Bedard's wing, then they need to, then like somebody needs to get arrested because, what perfect players to play with, right? But if they do choose to have them all at center, like that's your center depth is set, right? So, anyways, it's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And you brought up Macklin Celebrini because I got in a viewing of Jaden Perron like a week ago, who is an interesting player for this draft class. The playmaking skill is right up there with the top five in the class. Really great off puck movement. He's small, but I know some people I really like. I scouts I really respect have him in their top 10. I'm not at that yet. I think he's more of like a 20-ish range player. But he plays on the line with Macklin Celebrini. And I was watching him play, and my eye was always drawn towards the center. And I was like, who is this player? Like, how have I missed like this player on Chicago that's this good? And I search up the number, and I'm like, oh, it's Celebrini. That's why. And very, very impressive guy.
No, agreed.
And Jordan, are there any final notes for you? So this is your stage to plug your links, to talk about anything you want.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a European crossover scout at Dauber Prospects. And additionally, I am a Russian regional scout at Dauber Prospects. You can find my work there. I tweet mainly about prospects, Detroit Red Wings, and any other interesting, prospects or hockey stuff that I come across. My Twitter handle is Jordan_NHL draft. And it's just spelled JORDAN. Trying to think what else. One thing I'm actually doing, and I don't know when this podcast will actually air, so it might actually be after the fact, but the PWHPA All-Star event is in Ottawa this weekend, and I'm representing an organization called Grindstone Foundation. What they do is they raise money to give equipment and registration fee grants for girls who want to play hockey, who might not necessarily have the means to. So anyways, all that to say is, I'll be at that event there. There's games going on. There's an All-Star, event on the Sunday. I'll be out there on the Saturday. If you're there, swing by, chat with me. You can support a good cause. And at the same time, you're supporting a great event with, the PWHPA and their quest for a sustainable league. So that's kind of, stuff that I kind of want to chat about there. I don't know, like I said before, I don't know when this will air. So if it's going to be after the fact, then that's fine. But that's kind of what I'm up to this weekend. So yeah, that's all.
Well, awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been a joy to listen to your takes on the European prospects in this draft. I'm looking forward to Sunday's Dauber meet and seeing how our top 50 ends up looking. On that note, also thank you to Aaron and Josh for joining us today on the panel, and we will see you again next week. Get you.